welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. We have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, and generally things dealing with how those two tie together with understanding our Creator and why life is. Yes. For some people, they often ask me, well, what do you mean by metaphysics compared to regular physics and that sort of thing? And I think it's appropriate to start off by saying that metaphysics is just an extension of physics. It's a way of looking at science beyond our present understandings, but understandings at least in the common sense. But in the uncommon, it's still considered by some people at least a scientific pursuit. Nonetheless, tonight's show is improving spiritual romantic relationships. I thought it would be interesting to go over that subject. We've had some shows dealing with this subject before. But, you know, I always deal with it from a different kind of angle. To begin with, again, I'm going to define terms. Spiritual. What do I mean by spiritual? Spiritual means the part of our Creator that is its thought as represented anywhere in anything. So something is spiritual when that thought is being expressed, when it is not the Creator's thought and something other than in accord with the Creator's thought, then it would not be spiritual thinking or spiritual thought, and it wouldn't be part of what would be considered spirit. Now, so spirit is really something that we would consider to be the non-physical, non-physics element. So if something is metaphysical, it usually includes spirit, but it doesn't have to. And if it does, that's like the whole banana, because then you've got the three parts of what I consider to be the Creator in our universe. The first two parts of it are its thought, which is the thing that actually expresses itself through many different ways, almost an infinite variety. And then, in addition, there's activity or action that comes from the physical issues or the physical side of things. Some people call it energy in this dimension of time and space. So that's how it works. And again, I'm kind of giving you a thumbnail of that, not a full definition. And when we talk about romantic, of course, we're talking about relationships in which the people usually have a connection that involves both sexuality and sometimes procreation. But in all cases, it involves a commitment to the other person that is, we'll say, more complete in a relationship sense than usually is the case in other types of relationships. So that's my definition. Now, many people say, well, romance is this or romantic is that. Well, okay, but that's how I'm defining it. And if you disagree, by the way, give me a call. The numbers are on the site, so you can just call them up. I don't have to repeat them over the air because you can get them right in front of you, which is great. And I would love to hear from you. So, and by relationships, I mean people that are committed in some way to being connected for a period of time as defined by themselves, but certainly more than an hour or two or something of that nature. So I'm not talking about something that is very, very short-lived. That, to me, is not a romantic relationship that would be spiritual. It might be a romantic relationship of a non-spiritual type, okay? So, and again, I'm leaving this wide open, I hope, or as wide open as I can, because some people will say, well, if it's really wide open, and you could talk about having two-minute relationships with somebody. Yeah, I guess you could, if you prefer that, but I don't. Okay, and let me begin by stating that I'm going to make some statements, and then I'm going to explain why, that spiritual romantic relationships only work, in my opinion, when there is monogamy. Monogamy means that there's a commitment between the two people to be in the or a spiritual relationship with one another, and not with others at the same time. And you might say, Well, how come that's the case? You're just being prejudicial against us folks who like polygamy or who just like doing our own thing or whatever. And the answer is actually a bit metaphysical. It has to do with science as much as it has to do with any other elements. And let me explain so that we're on the same page. Some of you have heard me explain this before, or if you've read the textbook, I wrote you notes in there with diagrams and pictures and all that stuff explaining it. Probably better than I'll even do tonight. But at any rate, let's go into it a little bit. When two people are romantically attracted, involved with one another, they have sexual energy. That sexual energy isn't necessarily just when they are sexually involved in an activity. And in some cases, it could be between two people who actually don't have any activity, although that's a little kind of a special case, but it could be. But if it's truly romantic, I'm including that in the definition, if you recall earlier of what I said. So this sexual energy is actually exchanged between the two people. And that's the important element that builds the sexual side of the romantic part. In the exchange, that changes each person to be more like the other person by the way that they give the energy to each other. They don't give the energy to the other person in the way they are. They have to convert that energy into the way the other person is through what's called empathy and the ability to understand how the other person feels and needs, etc. This is a good thing because it allows us to experience what other people are like through them giving to us energies that are more like us than they are like them, and vice versa. Then you have real love, and that's spiritual, you see. If that isn't going on, and people are really just into themselves and being sexual, then they would have a non-spiritual relationship. And it could be romantic, it could be very sexual, but it's not spiritual because the love is missing. And the high levels of empathy necessary to maintain that love would be missing in just the way they feel and express their sexual feelings towards the other person. Okay, I hope that makes some sense. I went a little bit faster because I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. But I do want it to be understood that if you started to do the same thing sort of in a serial method, like, okay, I'll have sex with this person in the morning, that person in the afternoon, the next person in the evening, and you just go through your life that way, you are attuning your sexual center, which is where the energy is entering and leaving. Again, that's metaphysical. Metaphysical because it's part of physics, but it's also beyond physics because physics doesn't necessarily recognize what sexual energy is, nor where it might be coming from. We're talking about coming from a center. Some people like the word chakra, whatever you want to call it, but it actually has a position in the body. If you're into Eastern medicine, you know what I'm talking about. And so the flow of this energy is very, very important because it builds the other person's sexual identity and makes their center better. It helps them to become a better person in some respects, more healthy in some ways. So it's very important. It's a great thing to have a relationship of this nature. But if you go against it by having sexual relations from one person to the next, you're constantly changing your center and their centers in ways that are keeping you from becoming your full potential and the other person's full potential because you're not developing each other for the purpose of the other person. You're doing it in a selfish way. And that produces relatively negative effects, more unhealthiness. It produces more weakness in the overall, we'll call it etheric and other parts dimensionally of our bodies. And it doesn't result in closeness with the other person. Quite the opposite. You are more distant every time you do this because instead of becoming closer with the other person, you're becoming more distant through the sexual exchanges of energy. So monogamy becomes critical in this element. Because if you don't practice monogamy, you can't become spiritual in your romantic relationship. And the results will be kind of a negative spirituality, a non or anti-spiritual kind of expression. Now, some people are going to be upset to hear that. It's okay, you can call me and say you're upset. I'm here. And even if you don't call me, you can still be upset with me. Because I know some people really believe differently from that. And that's okay. I'm telling you what I understand about this, and I'm using some elements of metaphysics in the explanation, trying to keep it away from quote-unquote saying it's immoral or it's this or that. It may be in some people's minds. I'm not trying to put that into the equation. I'm just explaining it based upon how I understand it, and if you buy it, fine. If you don't, that's another thing. You don't have to. But there are ways to test this theory out. Because I think if you were to commit yourself to being monogamous and then do the opposite or vice versa, you would see considerably different things change inside of you, and the way your senses change, they'll diminish if you are non-spiritual, and a lot of other factors, which are listed again in some of the writings I've done, the dozens, even hundreds of papers I've written on this and lectures, etc., plus the books. All that will give enough information to test the validity. So if you really want to check me out, do so, because I invite that. This is the place where it's good to get the information to be able to check it out. Okay, so monogamy becomes critical if you're going to really make a difference. Now, what happens if one person is monogamous and the other person isn't and is like cheating? We call that cheating, I guess, and doesn't tell the other person. What are the results of that kind of behavior? Well, the first thing that happens in those situations is that, believe it or not, both people in a very short period of time should be aware that that's what's happening. Now, you can say, well, but he didn't tell me or she didn't tell me. But if you're aware of what's going on inside you, you're going to also sense this lack of loving energy being exchanged, and during any expression of sexuality, even if it's not directly physical, and it should be apparent, but that doesn't mean it is. The reason it isn't is because we live in illusion a lot of the time. We prefer to live by what we desire from another person than what is real. And some people desire that our partners be faithful and be loving, etc. And so, unfortunately, we kind of create or invent in our imagination what we believe is happening when it isn't what we're really experiencing. And then we may not notice the obvious signs that the other person is probably wandering around doing other things than being attentive to us and interested in us. Some people notice it, but they invent an excuse. Oh, well, they're very troubled by doubt, so they're just not into the, you know. But it's more than that. It's more than that, because when someone is actually doing this thing about cheating, you can sense something more than just a lack of energy coming from them, or we'll say troubled in them. You can sense their own center changing over time because they are being sexual with someone else. That's the thing that you need to be aware of, and you can feel it. Now, I don't want to get too descriptive over the air, so if you really need to know about this, you might have to give me a call or something, because I can't explain it in ways that it won't maybe get me in trouble talking on the radio about it. So, but nonetheless, it is directly experienceable, and so consequently, we have that capability. Now, the reason most people don't really get it is because they don't want to. I just want you to understand that. So don't completely blame everyone else, especially the other person who might be cheating on you, because you yourself are living somewhat in illusion through your own desires. Okay, so it's very important that monogamy be cupped, because when it isn't, it's destructive to both people. And it can't really be a spiritual romantic relationship then. I hope I really push that home right now, because I know that there's some resistance, particularly among maybe our younger listeners. I think people get this as they get older. But it takes time to break through some of these illusions. And the younger you are, the more you may tend to disbelieve what I'm saying. And I think the older you are, the more you may tend to buy it, you know, because you've experienced what I'm saying. You've broken through your illusions, and you know what I'm saying is right on the money. Okay. What are the real other ways? I mean, that's like the extreme obvious problems, but what are the other ways we can improve spiritual relationships? And I'm going to tell you some of the pitfalls and problems that people have. Many people think, because the word spiritual is in there, it's all about how you think and maybe how you feel about another person. But God, our creator, is a being who also seeks interaction. Part of our universe, a major part of it, is activity. It's a tremendously energy-inspired, active universe that we exist in. And if two people are spiritually committed to being close and wanting to develop more of a relationship romantically, they need to share activities. And the activities need to be the more creative elements of what they do throughout their life, especially on a daily basis, not just like once a year or something. And now this is going to bother some people again. I mean, I always could get my foot in my mouth or something like that, because what I'm saying is it has to be the more creative rather than the more mundane, less creative elements of what it is that they are doing in order to develop a higher level of spiritual romantic relationship. So, in other words, if you're going out dancing once a week, and that isn't highly creative for you, now maybe it could be for some people, and I want to be very careful here, but for a lot of people it might just be a little fun or something. Or let's say that you go bowling, or you ride a bicycle once a week together, or you play cards, or do any number of events, activities. But if those are relatively non-creative activities, remember, an activity is creative when the activity is in a state of change caused by the thought of the people involved in the activity. In other words, you've got to think of and come up with new ways of whatever the activity is that we're talking about. And it needs to be done together if it's going to be an improvement in the spiritual romantic relationship. Now, for a lot of people that I would think that are listening to my voice right now, they're saying, uh-oh. So that may be the problem. Now I can see that could be, if this guy's right, you know, that's what they always say. If this guy's right, then that may be where the problem was. Yep, that's it. That's a biggie, and for a good number of people, it's a very significant issue. So I know people say, well, but I like to go out with my friends and be creative, or with my business or working associates and do things that are more creative. Not with my spouse or my romantic relationship partner or whatever. I don't like it when I do it with them. Well, then you're going to have more trouble, specifically improving the spiritual side of your romantic relationship. That's a fact. And if you're serious about wanting to improve it, you're going to need to break through the illusions you have about those issues. Now, why would people not want to do that? Well, I'm going to tell you what it does when you are creative in a spiritually romantic relationship, and I think that'll be the dead giveaway, okay? When you are mutually creative together, Now, this is also true for people who actually aren't in romantic relationships, but like are in a spiritual kind of group situation where they're trying to do good things for other people. Same kind of circumstances actually exist. When you are actually doing whatever the creative activities are, remember, it isn't just a matter of thinking about it like alone, or even thinking about it and just barely talking about it, but it's actually planning and doing. You got to do it together. So if you are doing this, you increase the level of closeness between all of the different ways that your body senses with the other person's body senses, your body thinks with the other person's body's thought processes and brains, if you want to call it that, too. The brain is like a big storage system. So you're connecting with them in numerous ways simultaneously. I'm kind of short-circuiting this thing. I'm short-handing it. I'm not getting into all the different parts of it because that could be like a whole show just in itself. But I'm giving you the thumbnail again of what that means. Okay, so when we are actually creatively and in a way that's along the thought of our creator's mind, in other words, virtuously, doing something together with another person who we're romantically involved with, we are actually bonding with them, becoming like them in some ways, and exchanging our likenesses between each other, just the way sexual energy is exchanged. And so this produces a kind of closeness that is unique and dynamic and very strong. Now, some people are afraid of that kind of closeness. And the reason they fear it, now this is an interesting point, because it sounds counterintuitive at first. You say, well, gee, well, I'm not afraid to be close because that may be a big deal. But some people are, because this level of closeness reveals not just our great, wonderful qualities, which are always great, and that's good to do and have, but any of the negative things about ourselves, any of the things that we don't want others to know about us, especially someone we want to be romantically involved with. And there is the rub. That is the paradox. Paradox is like two things that kind of don't exactly fit together, but they have to exist in order for the whole concept to be there. And that's exactly what this is, a paradox. Because here are people that really want to have a romantic relationship together, and this is such a common problem that it's like epidemic. But they fear at a certain point getting any closer because it would reveal to the other person who is so significant to them their own foibles, the problems that they have, the things that are not attractive to themselves, much less maybe the other person. And things that trouble them about who they are and what they are and what they want to be. You see, so this becomes one of the biggest factors in preventing two people from developing an infinitely great spiritual romantic relationship. Infinite in the sense that it would keep growing and growing and growing. It becomes a tremendous obstacle. And it's always the lowest common denominator that produces this problem. So if you have two people, one person with a pretty good higher self and lower self image, and they're not too bad, trying to have a relationship with someone who has a fairly low self image, meaning they don't like themselves very much, then the amount of intimacy, the amount of closeness that the two people are going to have is determined by the person with the lowest level. You might say, well, isn't it, I thought it's always true that the two people are very similar. I don't think so. I think there are some cases, a lot of cases, where people are similar in their self-development, and then they would be about the same level before they back off. But in some cases, it isn't like that. And so then you would find the person with the lowest level of self-development, the person who has the most amount of fear of revealing themselves through the creative acts that would be necessary to spiritually get close to someone, they are usually the limiting factor. That's very problematic, to say the least. Okay, so this is probably the number one biggest reason that people don't get the kind of spiritual relationship that they want on a romantic level with another person. It's because they're afraid and their own fears prevent it from happening. Wow. Now you might say, well, how does this guy really know this stuff? Well, you remember, I was a psychotherapist for a long time. I ran a couple different mental health institutes and stuff, and I saw a lot of people. Now you can say, yeah, I saw most of the screwed up ones. Nah, that's not true. But I also saw people get better. That's the most important thing. And, you know, the way people get better and improve their spiritual romantic relationships is to be able to admit first to themselves and then gradually over time to their significant others, especially the person they're romantically involved with, what it is or what things they're on that are not going right inside themselves. And this is the ways that they can grow together and improve. And it's also the only way they're going to ever be really creative with others. Because creation involves tremendous risk in making errors. As a matter of fact, if you're too afraid that you're going to screw up half the time or three-fourths of the time, you're not going to be creative three-fourths of the time. It is required that a person accept that with creativity comes failure. It's inevitable because the more you push on the abilities of sense and skills and thought and interactions and actions, the more chance that something isn't going to go quite right. And especially if you're doing it on a co-basis with somebody else, it's like much greater chance that something isn't going to work out. Because after all, it's not just your interaction. It's not just your action, but it's the interaction with somebody else, and they have to match and balance. And I mean, it gets fairly complicated very quickly. And so creativity becomes a real issue with people who have problems in their self, you see. And most people have some problems there. But when they're really close with somebody and they want to be closer, then they have even more problems about exposing much more about what's wrong with them. And then they have real problems in being creative with them. So now let's go back to our example that I said. And I'm going to cover this in the next part of the show. But remember what I said about some people are more willing to be creative with their coworkers and people they're more distant to than the people that they are closest with. How crazy and seemingly counterintuitive is that? Well, I want you to think about why that would be the case with everything I've explained so far. And when I come back from the break, we will talk about that and how to solve these problems and many other things as well. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're speaking about improving spiritual romantic relationships. And for those of you who heard the first part of the show, what did you come up with? I hope you came up with this idea, that the reason people seek to be creative with those that they are not closest with is because it is safer for them to do so. They have less fear, and the consequences of failure reveal less to the other person of significance than to someone who would be much closer to them and would understand the real failings they have. So this is why people will go off with relatively, we'll say, not so close friends and do creative things. Do creative things when they're at work. Do creative things when they may be at church or some other organizational thing. And come home and not be creative with the most intimate people in their lives. And the way to break through this is to admit first to ourselves in both meditative reflection and contemplation, those things that need some correction, and don't keep them to ourselves. They should be shared and expressed to those we are closest with first, so that we can be most creative with those people, which is most effective in our life and in their lives, and we will also become much better in terms of a relationship partner with them. Wow. Does that not surprise you? I think it does for some people, because most people, unfortunately, live in the illusion. The illusion is that they have very little wrong with themselves. Isn't that right? We're all so perfect, yeah. And whatever is wrong with us, we're not going to fix overnight anyway, so why worry about it, and let's not talk about it, let's not think about it, etc. And the reason we should be concerned about those things is in order to grow more like and become more like God, like our Creator, we need to be honest with ourselves, and especially with those we're closest with. Now, does that mean that we should have some kind of cathartic session, like each of us sit down with our closest confidants, our closest relationship people, and say, this is everything that's terrible about me, and sort of just let it all out? Well, actually, that may not solve the problem. Because, you see, it isn't just about expressing what's wrong. It's part of the creative process, once you express some of the things that are wrong, is in correcting them through a relationship bond, through each person's strengths helping the other person's weaknesses to become stronger. And this is the best way to grow a relationship. Nothing works better than this, believe me. Nothing works better. Both people trying to help the other to become better in the ways they are weaker, and vice versa. It doesn't mean that you're coddling the weaknesses in others. Quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. That's not what I'm trying to say at all, if you kind of thought that initially. What I'm suggesting is you're trying to help the other person to develop a strength where they had a weakness, not doing it for them, never doing things for them to take the responsibility away from the person or something like that. You can help, but don't usurp their abilities or even their failures. It's also being humble. Humility is so important in this whole equation, and it's such a problem these days. It's gotten worse. We human beings have become more and more egotistical. It's a very serious problem. Some of us have become arrogant as well. And this type of problem, which is part of our whole race, it's like all of humanity has it. Some parts, some groups worse than others. But nonetheless, without humility, this keeps us from being spiritual. Humility and spirituality are like the two sides of the same coin. And it's almost impossible to significantly develop your spirituality if you're not humble. This is tough. I talk to a lot of people on occasion. And one of the things they notice about me, although they don't say it quite like this, they say, well, you just speak your mind and you're kind of like, you just say who and what you are. You don't try to put on any kind of airs or anything. They say things like that. What they're really describing, and I hope I'm right about this, because I could be wrong, is my level of humility. And that's what they see. They say, oh, this guy is willing to accept that he can be wrong and that he's able to be wrong. And so that's good. That doesn't mean I walk around thinking I'm a terrible person all the time and not recognizing the things that I do that are successful, etc. Because I do that, too. I balance that in myself. I'm humble because humility means I accept the fact that I can be wrong when faced with any kind of challenging thought. And someone says, well, I think that it's really this way. Okay, tell me how it is. And I accept that you could be right and I can be wrong. So I'll first accept that you're right, I'm wrong, let me hear it, and so I can understand it. Then I'm open to trying to evaluate it. But that doesn't mean that I believe all the time everything I think is wrong. No, that's not humility. That would be self-defeating thinking. That would be very negative. It just means that when someone else says, I've got a better idea, this is my idea, I want to hear it. I want to understand it because, my ideas sometimes aren't the best ideas. Sometimes they're goofy ideas. And if I'm being co-creative with somebody else, it's very, very important that I am humble so that their ideas become as important as mine, maybe even sometimes more so, so that I hear them and I can promote in them their creativity and not try to trounce on it. Now, this is a big deal because a lot of people do the exact opposite, especially with those they are intimate with. This is a difficult, difficult problem because it's counter to the very idea of spiritual romantic relationships. If one person is telling the other person, I always know when it's right and when I'm right and what's wrong and you're wrong all the time and you can't do this, you can't do that, then at that point, that relationship is no longer spiritual. And instead is a destructive relationship with very dark overtones. Many relationships at the present time have that as a common problem in comparison to actually being more spiritual. And if you want to improve the spirituality, you got to become humble and you got to get rid of preventing other people from being creative by putting them down or preventing them from expressing ideas and thoughts. that may be completely complementary and helpful and good ideas. So in other words, that, you know, it's not that others can't express their ideas, but if you constantly say, well, I need to express my ideas all the time, I don't want to hear anybody else's, well, then you're not being humble. You're being a dictator, you're being a egotist, and you're not trying to be close with anybody. You're being trying to be distant. You will create tremendous distance between yourself and somebody who is a romantic partner. No question about it. That's what's going to be the bottom line. Yeah. Okay. So we've come a long way, I hope, in understanding some of the major problems that actually prevent people from having a spiritually romantic relationship. What else? Well, another element that comes into play is the parenting aspect. Now, it could be parenting of animals, but I'm usually thinking about children here. And if you have children, it is darn important that what I've talked about so far be instilled as part of the parenting process with the children that you are rearing. If one person has these ideas that I'm suggesting in this show tonight, and the other person doesn't, that is going to almost inevitably screw up the kids and at some time in the future end the relationship between the adults. And if this has already happened to you, you understand what I'm talking about. If you don't have respect for the children in their creations and give and have humility in their ability to think and allow them the right to make mistakes, because they're going to, growing humans, children, inevitably make more mistakes than those who are more mature. And more mature adults, regardless of specific chronological age, make fewer mistakes than those who are less mature. And so we have to allow them to make mistakes while we at the same time help them to correct them and show humility when they are not necessarily making mistakes and not try to do everything for them either. These are all important elements. Some parents, and this is pretty predominant, are fearful of their children making mistakes. That's not a good thing, because then the children become fearful, and that's part of this whole process. You see, the fear of making mistakes then reduces the creativity, and the closer you are to someone, the more you're fearful to be creative in their presence or co-creative in their interactions. So as a family unit, this affects the entire family. It can start with the adults, but it can easily spin down to the children. And then nobody in the family is being co-creative on any significant level. The family has distances between all the people. And how terrible of a thing is that? That is really bad. Then not only are the parents in trouble, lacking intimacy in their relationship and a lack of spiritually romantic elements, but also they lack it with their parent, with their children. And the children lack it between themselves and their peers and their siblings. You can see how this really makes a mess out of a family structure. I'm hoping for those of you who are having these difficulties or who have had them, that this will be some help in how to correct those problems. Remember, humility, huge. Children learn what they live. I love that poem, by the way. Unknown author, but it's a great poem. And they learn what they live by some of the most basic things, including humility. So if you're humble, your children will become humble, and then that will allow them to grow more. If you're tolerant of their errors, then they will be tolerant of the errors in themselves and in others, and they will get along with their siblings and their friends, and they will also, as a family unit, grow together in a co-creative way, because that's a spiritual relationship. It isn't necessarily romantic, I hope not, with everybody in the family, but it is a spiritual relationship nonetheless, and it's part of how families should function, you see. This is a wonderful thing. I hope that that makes some sense to those of you who have had some problems in raising children at this point. Okay, let me move on to another more specific element. What about the question, you know, a lot of people have approached me with this question, of when it is appropriate to have sexual relations with another person. Some people say, well, you have to be married before God, or you have to be married in some legal way, or whatever the situation is before you have a certain level of sexuality, or any level of sexuality. Each person may have a different idea what that means. And here's an interesting point. I think that people are married before God, or within God, more to me within them before, but are, when they act godly with each other and with each other towards others and helping the others to do the same. That's a soul level of functioning. When people function as souls, to me, if they're romantically involved, they're married. Now you might say, wow, well, you're saying, then, you know, we should all throw away marriage. No, I don't say that. As a matter of fact, I believe there is a definite need for legality in marriage. The first need is in when you're having children. Anybody who's deciding, or by accident, or however they choose, whatever, they have children, they need to be legally married. It protects the children in numerous ways, and it is a necessity for the children's betterment that the parents be legally married. That's my opinion. Okay, you can disagree with me. You can say, this guy's some kind of, you know, traditional. You know. I don't care. Whatever you want to call it, I'm telling you based upon my understandings of both the metaphysics involved, that's the exchange of energies, and in the spiritual side of things, it's best for the children that the parents be married. Now, what about marriage after children are no longer an issue? Well, then it becomes one of how it affects others. How it affects others. At some point, there may be a reason to get married for the sake of the community of people. Because although it doesn't matter necessarily to people who don't have children that they'd be married, the fact that they aren't married may promote people who are having children not to get married. And that is a problem. So you see, you're doing it now for a sociological reason that has a wider impact on a group, community, even a nation, which you might say, well, why should I care about that? Well, because we're all part of a great unit of humanity, which is part of the growth of God, life itself. And so we have to have some concern for that. Now, if there are mitigating circumstances, it's permissible for some people, maybe, to not be married. But if everybody who didn't have the need to have children decided not to get married, it would affect the people who are having children, believe me. And there are other factors as well. What are the other factors? Well, there are legal complications which may leave you and the person you're in a relationship with in a difficult circumstance, such as a health problem that's life or death, or certain inheritance issues, certain controls of assets and other things, which our society has made decisions about, that married people don't have to go through the same complications that unmarried people do. Now, can you get around it if you make contracts and you have a lawyer on staff every minute? Probably, yeah, you could if you want to live your life like that way. It's okay, you can do that. But I'm just saying, for most people, that is a lot to devote for the purpose to just say, well, I'm not going to get married. Okay, that's all right. I mean, I'm not in favor or against just the concept in itself. I'm only suggesting the practical issues and how the whole thing works out. So it's something to consider. But for sure, it's about children. If you're going to have children, please get married. It's really important. And try to stay married, because children need both parents. And you say, well, we exchange them. You know, I get them on the weekend, they get them on the weekdays and the summer. But it's not the same thing, because remember, part of the process of the family is the creative element. The creative element adds to the spiritual side of it. And if one of the parents isn't there virtually all the time because they're quote-unquote sharing the kid or kids, then a lot of the creativity is missing and it's not so good. And you could say, well, what if I have a family and they have a family and so we just swap families back and forth? That can work. Yes, it can, but it's not, it will not develop the same level of closeness or intimacy as it will with the same people, because you get in the same issues about monogamy to some extent. No, you're not all exchanging sexual energy. I know that. But it's easier to be co-creative with those that we are most close with. And can we extend that to, like, two families? Well, sure, but it's not as easy. And for younger children, it becomes much more difficult because their skill levels are not good at this. So the younger the child is, the harder it is to live in two different families simultaneously back and forth. You can do it. And the kids are adaptable, and amazingly so. But I'm just saying it's the best is to have one family, if you can make it. But don't stay together if you're really not in love with each other and you don't want to continue the relationship. Don't stay together just for that reason. That's not a good one. Now let's talk about love. If you don't feel love, I'm running out of time here and this is an important subject. If you don't feel love in your heart for the other person as a romantic partner, you should not be together. That's it. I'm not, plain and simple. Because you won't be able to direct the energy correctly that is part of romantic relationships. And you will hurt yourself and the other person in the process. You'll become frustrated. They'll become frustrated. It's not good. It's better to leave. Even though it might upset the kids. Even if it goes against the tenet that I just said, that it's better the kids be in a family. It's not better if there's a lack of that love. Should only be in a spiritually romantic relationship when you love the other person and vice versa. That's it. Plain and simple. It's not equivocal, well, maybe sometimes I feel. No, if you don't feel it, you don't have it, find someone else to have it with. And be honest with yourself and the other person. Because for sure, if that is an element, you're going to really have trouble trying to be very intimately close with that person because you don't love them, and they're going to know that. Even if they love you, they're going to know that. So be aware of the, we'll call it, the problems that you present to yourself if you ignore that. And most people, I think, these days know that. I think if we go back a generation or two, that was much more of a problem than the earlier problems I talked about in the show, which I think are more prevalent today, by the way. Okay, we're out of time. There's so much more I could talk about this subject. And maybe we'll do another show on it. I don't think we'll do it next week, but, I like to occasionally revisit this subject because I think it's an important one. So many people have so much that they're interested in understanding about it. Okay, just want to mention, if you have a chance and you want to try resveratrol while it's still available, and remember the government is breathing down the necks of everybody these days anyway. You might want to try Ideal Soul Sorption Resveratrol made by Forever Young Products because I've been involved in the part of producing that product, and I can tell you right now it is the very best it's around. I've used it myself with great results. I recommend it to those people who would like to try it. Read more about it and see what you think. And if you want to contact me, you can get a hold of me at thoughts@whylikethis.com. Go to the website, angelswisdom.com, if you want to know more about the spiritual group that I'm part of, which is very interesting. And Mimi, who is like a co-server with me in the spiritual group I was telling you about, you can go and hear her speak. I think it's this coming Monday, I believe it is, from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. at Borders in Mesa. That's in the Phoenix area, if you happen to live in this area. And the topic is Creating Virtue at Mesa Fiesta, 1361 South Alma School Road. Go see her. There's no charge. That's great. And I also want to mention to you that if you haven't already, you can anytime listen to some of these shows over again because they're in the archives both on the station you're listening to. That's bbsradio.com. Or you can go to our website, which I already gave to you, angelswisdom.com, and you can hear a show anytime you might like. So that's another great thing to do. Well, we are out of time for today. The show has just flown by. I know. It's so interesting to me anyway. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.